Welcome to A Well Cared For Human, the podcast that tries to convince you that you are 100% normal and an even better than okay example of the human species, despite the fact that sometimes we feel like the craziest, most incapable, or worthless creatures on the face of this planet. I'm Corey, an author, a creative, and the host of the show. Whatever you're bringing to the table today, I hope this episode proves to be a dose of inspiration for you on your quest to become a well-cared-for human. You can find the episode show notes, your free wellness blueprint, and more at awellcaredforhuman.com. And as always, thank you for listening. Hello, humans. It's your host, Corey, and today we're going to talk about trauma-informed care. Specifically, my thoughts on whether or not trauma-informed care fits into the four-pillar model, into my definition of what it means to be a well-cared-for human. How do those principles align? And what is it even, in case you've never even heard of the term, trauma-informed care? And I want to use my mother's story, my story, as examples for the backdrop of how I think trauma-informed care might be a great match, or sometimes when it may not work. And so that's what we're going to get into today. And so if you've never heard of trauma-informed care, it's an approach in healthcare that acknowledges the trauma, the past experiences of the patient, someone who has come to them in a context of difficult background or a traumatic experience. Maybe there's PTSD involved. And this can happen in many different disciplines within the medical world. So right now, I am preparing a keynote presentation for a conference in April. And so I've been reading a lot about trauma-informed care because I know that it's something that healthcare professionals care about right now. And because I do think that it fits well into the model of the four pillars that I have been advocating for since the beginning, since I sat down in this booth for the first time with my little microphone and started talking about how I think we can care for ourselves out of these difficult circumstances. And so before I jump into that, I think it's important to reiterate my definitions of a well-cared-for human. So throughout the show, if you've been listening to it, you know that I define a well-cared-for human as a human who has a great relationship with themselves. And the way to build that relationship and to invest in that relationship is to understand that there are four pillars in your relationship with yourself. There's your relationship with your body, how you care for your body, how you talk to your body, the thoughts that you have about your body. There's your relationship with your mind and emotions, because mind and emotions share a pillar. Usually our thoughts and our feelings are co-arising. If we are thinking terrible things, we start to feel terrible. If we're feeling terrible, we start to create terrible scenarios in our mind. So I have them as one pillar, thoughts and emotions. So our relationship with that experience, that mental and emotional experience, our relationship with our spirit, the part of us that needs joy and creativity and play and a sense of purpose and meaning in our days, in our life. And then the fourth pillar being the connection pillar, our relationship with open-heartedness, with vulnerability, with reaching out and making loving connections to other people. And so those are the four aspects to having that healthy relationship with yourself, at least from the a well-cared-for human perspective. Now, trauma-informed care has six guiding principles, and I'm taking this from the research that I've been doing online for this conference, and I'm going to share the link to this research in the show notes just so you can read more about it if you like, know where I'm getting this information from. But the six guiding principles of trauma-informed care. One is safety. So that's defined as the safety that's felt on the organizational level between the staff and the people who work there, between the practitioners and the patients, the sense of feeling physically and psychologically safe in an environment, that it's important to feel physically and psychologically safe when you're doing this medical practice, whatever it might be, whether that's an outpatient situation or you're working with a doctor, feeling safe. The second principle is trustworthiness and transparency. So that has to do with the decisions that the organization makes, whether that's a hospital or a home health situation or a clinic, a private clinic, feeling like the decisions they make were done so transparently, like it's clear what their end goals are, and that that goal enforces building and maintaining trust between the staff and the clients, the family members and the patients. So really focusing on establishing trust and using transparency to establish that trust between everyone involved. The third guiding principle is peer support and mutual self-help. So peer support and mutual self-help is really necessary for building trust and establishing safety and empowerment, do you feel like the people involved, whether that's doctors, care providers, administrators, do you feel that the people involved are there to help you get better? Do you feel like they care? They're as invested in your treatment and your well-being as you are? That kind of emotional investment that, again, fosters a sense of safety and trust. The fourth guiding principle is collaboration and mutuality. So in collaboration and mutuality, there's recognition that healing happens when there's a meaningful sharing of power and decision-making between the parties, that everyone has a role to play in getting better. The patient has a role, the doctors, the facilitators have a role, the admin has a role. Everyone has a role to play in this approach. In the pithy one-liner quote that they use in the research that I'm reading from right now, they say, one does not have to be a therapist to be therapeutic. So this idea of everyone being involved, everyone working together, everyone having a mutual end goal in sight. The fifth guiding principle of informed trauma care is empowerment, voice, and choice. So do you feel like you have a voice in the kind of care that you receive? Do you feel like you have choices in the kind of care that you receive? And their definition of this is that the organization should aim to strengthen the staff and client relationship, strengthen the client and family member relationship by providing them with choices, by recognizing that every person's situation is unique and that every situation has to be personalized, individualized, in order to be of the best benefit for that patient. And it focuses on strengths, on what the clients, the staff, the communities, the patients, what they already have to offer, rather than focusing on deficits or what's lacking. And that's important because in the context of trauma, usually there's an emphasis on what you're missing, what's wrong with you. I've talked about that narrative a lot before, like what's wrong with you and what you have to do to fix you, which can be very disempowering. And so acknowledging that that language can be very disempowering is part of this trauma-informed care. And instead using language and choices that seek to make the patient feel like they can do this, that they will get positive outcomes, that they're not being held hostage by medical professionals and being forced into doing things they don't want to do. They are part of this healing journey, this healing practice. And then the sixth guiding principle of trauma-informed care is cultural, historical, and gender issues. So acknowledging that there are cultural stereotypes, that there are biases, that certain groups have historical shared traumas, and then focusing on being respectful and responsive to those shared histories, to those issues that might be present, and then making sure that the healing that's being done is respectful of cultural traditions or connections and recognizes that you can't really separate someone from their beliefs or their culture, you can't really separate someone from their gender, so to speak, and so that all of that plays a part in the healing journey for the patient. So those are the six guiding principles of trauma-informed care: making decisions, approaching care with the emphasis on establishing safety, trustworthiness and transparency, mutual support, peer support, self-help, collaboration, mutuality, empowerment of voice and choice, and then acknowledgement of these cultural, historical, and gender issues. Now, how does that apply to my four-pillar model? And we can use both my mother as an example and for me. So with my mother, someone who was highly traumatized, had PTSD, she definitely avoided medical situations as much as she could. So having a trauma-informed care response would have been especially helpful to someone like her because she would have already been terrified to even be there. I'm thinking of the story that I shared pretty early in the Who Killed My Mother podcast where she was struck in the head. She had that traumatic brain injury from the domestic violence situation with my uncle, and she needed to go to a rehabilitation center for at least 6 weeks to relearn how to walk and how to talk, but that she couldn't even stay there for that full time. She was only there for a couple weeks before she snuck out. And I have other memories of situations like that where she needed to get care. She needed to get treatment for either something that had happened physically or even just mental health issues. But instead of getting good care, she usually either ran from the experience or she only wanted a really superficial interaction, like the times that she would meet doctors, but only so that she could get like a pain pill prescription. And so both of those instances, certainly coming from a place where there is no trauma-informed care, there's no acknowledgement that here is a traumatized individual, her interactions with us are going to be different. We should proceed in a way that enforces this sense of trust and safety so that we can ensure that even she just completes treatment. I mean, keeping the bar pretty low, even just that she stays with us long enough to complete the treatment that she needs to complete. And so I do think that having trauma-informed care is useful for someone like my mother. I do wonder how effective it can be if someone is severely traumatized, if they have PTSD like she did from the sexual abuse she endured as a child. Because as was the case with my mother, she had a highly conditioned learned helplessness. And if you haven't heard me talk about learned helplessness before, there was a study that was done. It's an abusive story to the animals. Every time I think about it, I get mad. But the study itself was they put these dogs in cages and they gave them an electric shock, and they couldn't escape because the cages were closed. But then they did the study in a different version where they had the dogs in a cage, but the door was open, or there was a way for them to jump out, like there was a low barrier that they could have just escaped the shock from. But at that point, the dogs had learned helplessness, which means that when the shock came, when the bell rang that told them the shock was going to come, instead of trying to escape, they laid down. They basically surrendered to the shock that was coming. And so what this study sought to demonstrate was that animals could learn helplessness, that they could learn that I can't do anything to save myself and protect myself. And we see that in humans as well. Humans who have been continually exposed to trauma or to difficult circumstances that they could not escape from. In my mother's case, being repeatedly sexually abused by her father and then silenced by her mother, she learned helplessness that I can't stop this thing that's happening to me. Like, the bad things will happen to me and there's nothing I can do about it. That's how she learned helplessness. But that's just one example. There's many ways in which we learn helplessness with this repeated exposure to terrible things and then our inability to get out of it. And so it might seem counterintuitive that here's someone who learned helplessness, but also she wouldn't stay in the clinic and do her treatment. She escaped. So obviously she thought she could get away. You might think I'm saying two different things, but actually it's still the same issue, which is that what stays is the narrative. Even though my mother could physically walk away from something as an adult, the narrative is what sticks behind. The narrative that I'll never get better, I'll never get away from this, I'll never be okay. And so there's this mental rejection of the assistance that she's trying to get from people. So I do think this approach could be useful, especially in someone more like me who has trauma but isn't necessarily fully conditioned to learned helplessness. I would love to see more literature or more research on how trauma-informed care addresses learned helplessness. I'm not sure that I've seen enough information to make an assessment as to whether or not this would be great for someone like my mother who had been fully conditioned to be helpless. But it is hard to provide care for people if they just don't believe that they're going to get better. But if there's someone like me who was highly traumatized but hasn't been fully conditioned to learn helplessness, these trauma-informed care practices are still very useful. So I'm thinking of the instance where they thought that maybe I was being sexually abused as a kid, and so they did this very invasive procedure on me when I was like six, seven years old. And for that reason, I had a real fear of doctors, of especially something like a pap smear or anything to do with my body. And for a long time, I didn't even want to go. Like, I didn't even want to get checked out for anything because I was so scared about this situation. But eventually, I was able to heal that and to get over because I had very caring physicians. I was like, look, this is what happened to me when I was younger. I'm absolutely terrified right now. And they used the trauma-informed care to walk me through it. They implemented these six guiding principles in which they were very transparent about what was happening. They worked hard to establish a sense of trustworthiness and safety. They were trying to keep me involved in the care, helping me to feel like I was empowered, that I had a voice and a choice, that I wasn't actually being like strapped to the table or held down like I was as a child. Because when I was held down as a child, that was part of the trauma from the medical situation, which is that I had been forcibly held down during the procedure. And so that is what had scarred me. That's what had traumatized me. And so they were using these trauma-informed care practices to help me get past that. And I think that that's really essential, that it could be very useful for a lot of people who need to get care, but being aware that it's really difficult for them to be in these situations. Medical situations are often very vulnerable situations. You know, sometimes we don't have our clothes on, or sometimes people that we don't know have to touch us. And so there's things about it that can be very terrifying. And so I really do think it's great that they are investing time and money and research in trauma-informed care. They're figuring out how that looks in action, how they can use it for people, because a lot of people do have trauma. I've talked about the ACEs before, adverse childhood experiences. If you've had an ACE, which is something that happened to disrupt your sense of safety or bonding or security as a child, that could have been your parents' divorce, that could have been being raised in a home with alcohol use or drug use, it could have been parent with mental health issues, parent being incarcerated, any of these unsafe situations, then you would have acquired at least one ACE. One adverse childhood experience. So that's up to 70% of people. I read the numbers anywhere between 64 and 70%, depending on the study. But that's a lot of people that has at least one ACE. But one in six of us have four or more. So one in six of us are considered traumatized, like highly traumatized people. And so a lot of the people that are coming into healthcare settings who are encountering doctors or therapists or these other medical professionals, they are traumatized people. And so I think being aware of that can be really helpful. And sticking to the definition, because again, my definition of a well-cared-for human is a person who has a great relationship with themselves, it translates in the context of trauma-informed care too. So having a great relationship with yourself is defined as a relationship that's honest, a relationship that is respectful, a relationship that is trusting, and a relationship with open communication. So that's the definition. If you were to look up, if you were just to Google, what is a healthy relationship? It would give you the definition. A healthy relationship is a relationship with honesty, trust, respect, and open communication. And that's essentially the trauma-informed care principles. An honest relationship is the transparency and the collaboration. Like, you're telling them what's going on when it's happening. There's no secrets. No one's going to pull out something from behind their back that's terrifying. The trust is that sense of safety, the trustworthiness, the belief that they are committed to your well-being as much as you are. The respect is acknowledging the experiences that you've had. So in the context of trauma-informed care, that could be the cultural, historical, or gender issues, or that could be respecting your choices, empowering you and your voice, respecting the role that you play in you getting better. And then also open communication is fostering that sense of collaboration, of mutuality, of peer support and self-help, being as invested and communicative with each other in this process. And so trauma-informed care does reinforce my idea that to be well is to have a great relationship with yourself. And I can see how these six principles fit into helping someone enforce that objective of having a great relationship with their body, with their mind and emotions, with their spirit, with their connection to others. Because if you have a positive experience with your healthcare providers, that's going to strengthen your connection pillar. If you feel like you have choice and that your voice matters and what you want matters, that's going to strengthen your spirit pillar. If you feel like your needs are being honored and your perspective and thoughts on the situation are being honored, that's going to help you to de-escalate your mental and emotional pain. And if you feel safe, if you feel like your body's being treated respectfully and kindly by your care providers, that's going to help you with the body pillar. So I do think, overall, trauma-informed care is a great approach, and it could help a lot of people. And we have a lot of traumatized people, so we absolutely need to do it. I just wonder how effective it would be with someone like my mother who has that strong streak of learned helplessness, and if there's any adjustments that need to be made to account for that. So if this is interesting to any of you, I know that some of you who listen to this, you are nurses, you are healthcare practitioners. If you know more about trauma-informed care and about learned helplessness in patients, and you have resources to point me to, please share. I would love to learn more about this. I'm really interested in it. I did this deep dive, again, preparing for this conference so that I could be of the most benefit to the people who I'll be speaking to. But like most things, I've talked about it before, when I start reading about something and I get interested, I do these deep dives. And so now I'm really fascinated by this idea of the trauma-informed care approach and how it fits into our having a healthy relationship with ourselves. Because healthcare providers are often the people that we encounter when we're trying to heal something. So it would be wonderful to figure out how we could make the most of those relationships going forward, what role healthcare providers could be for facilitating that journey of building a healthy relationship with yourself. So I would love to read more about that. If you know any other research I should be checking out, please send it my way. And if you have any thoughts on maybe experiences that you had, maybe you have had trauma-informed care yourself, or you've had a negative experience in the medical sense as well, and you want to share that. In all cases, I'd love to hear from you. But that's it for today, dear human. I really hope that you found this episode interesting and useful, and it helped you think about the four pillars and having a great relationship with yourself in a new and interesting way. I would love to hear your thoughts on trauma-informed care if you want to shoot me an email. Otherwise, I will be back next week with a new episode of A Well-Cared-For Human, and until then, please take good care of you. This episode of A Well Cared For Human was written and produced by me, Corey Marie. The music was by Late Night Feeler and Esther Abrami. If you like what I'm doing here, please consider visiting my Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you get early ad-free access to the episodes, as well as a monthly patrons-only Q&A, bonus videos, and more. Not to mention that your Patreon support lets me know that you find value in the show and want it to continue. You can find me on Patreon by visiting www.patreon.com/Corey Marie. If you can't support the show financially, that is okay. You can still subscribe to the show, leave a review of the show, and recommend the show to your friends, not just the neurotic ones. All of this helps so much. And as always, thank you for listening.